Good morning. As we honor Martin Luther King Jr. this coming Monday, it is important to remind ourselves that civil disobedience has a long history. Some scholars claim that Gandhi was influenced by an ancient tradition of civil disobedience in his own country. And we now know that Gandhi protested South African pass laws a year before he read Henry David Thoreau's famous work on civil disobedience in 1907. But it cannot be doubted that Thoreau's work did give an intellectual framework for Gandhi's program of active nonviolence, as well as new ideas for specific forms of non-cooperation. When faced with unjust laws, Thoreau proposed that people could, quote, obey them, amend them, or transgress them. With respect to the fugitive slave law of 1850, Thoreau chose to transgress. In eventually supporting the violent acts of John Brown, Thoreau broke with the nonviolent resistance to which Gandhi and King consistently adhered. In July 1846, Thoreau refused to pay a poll tax and spent one night in jail for his crime. Thoreau proclaimed that, quote, under a government that imprisons unjustly, the true place for a just man is also in prison. Gandhi and King would go to jail for much longer terms and willingly accept the punishment for breaking the law. We can now discern several principles of civil disobedience. The first principle is that you maintain respect for the rule of law even while disobeying the law that you perceive as unjust. Gandhi very much admired Socrates' respect for Athenian law and his decision not to flee when his prison guards were bribed. King was always confident that American democracy would eventually treat his people as equal under the rule of law. Nonviolent activists do not seek to undermine the rule of law, but only the repeal of unjust laws. Gandhi and King's demands were clear and simple. Laws that discriminate and disenfranchise must be abolished. Indian outcasts, African Americans, and gays do not want special rights. They simply want the rights that all others enjoy. The second principle of civil disobedience follows from the first. You should plead guilty to any violation of the law. As Gandhi explains, quote, I'm here to submit cheerfully to the highest penalty that can be inflicted on me, for that in law is a deliberate crime. Gandhi instructed his disciples to take the penance of their oppressors upon themselves. Gandhi's tactics were a form of moral and political jujitsu. Some of Gandhi's judges felt that as if they were the ones charged and convicted. Thoreau said that his one night in jail made the state look foolish. We've now arrived at the third principle of civil disobedience. You should attempt to convert your opponent by demonstrating the justice of your cause. Active nonviolence does not seek, as Gandhi says, to defeat or humiliate your opponents, but to win their friendship and understanding. Although Thoreau quoted Hindu scripture in his book Walden, there's a much stronger spiritual dimension to Gandhi's and King's political activism. One could criticize them for violating the hallowed separation of politics from religion. This criticism, however, is unfounded. The Establishment Clause certainly does not ban the expression of religious views. It only prescribes the favoring of one religion over another. Gandhi's and King's vision was inclusive and non-judgmental, rather than declarations, such as a recent one by an army officer in uniform, that our God is greater than Allah. Nonviolent resistance to oppressive regimes had a good track record in the late 20th century. From the Baltic states across the Ukraine and east to the Philippines, ordinary people in dozens of countries have proved Thoreau correct. When all subjects have refused allegiance and all officers have resigned from office, then the revolution is accomplished. This is Nick Geyer wishing you a good day.